And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. You know, it's so amazing what the Bible says, that in the last days, men will be given a mark. And they will have to have this mark either in their forehead or their right hand. Either the mark or the name or the number of the beast, which is 666. And unless they worship the image of the beast, they will not be allowed, unless they have this mark or name or number, they will not be allowed to even buy and sell. And that means, of course, they will starve to death. And I'm sure there will be laws and regulations passed that you may not even give free food, free products to people, unless one way or another they're able to identify themselves through their ID cards or smart cards that everyone is now going to be given. And you'll recall that we talked about that in my book, Project Lucid, L-U-C-I-D. So the last days world system of Big Brother control will be based on money and the ability, or I should say the inability, to buy and sell. I would like to talk to you today then about that ability, the ability to buy and sell. And you know, it's very much circumscribed if you don't have the money or the plastic card. In other words, the credit. The ability to buy and sell. It's not only a matter of the mark or the name or the number of the beast, but it's whether or not you have it in your banking account. And I want to warn American workers today and American people, there is coming a time, and already is in many cases, where people do not have the money to buy or sell in their banking account or anywhere else. I want to talk to you about the downfall of the American economy. The crushing of the American economy. The financial collapse of the American people, which is going to cause a tremendous and dramatic turn in your way of life. Now, it's interesting to me that downfalls sometimes don't come all at once. But even the Bible tells us that before the great calamities of the last days, there will be certain birth pangs. You see, the Bible equates it, uses the analogy of a woman who's pregnant. Before the baby comes, she has some feelings, some tremors, some, you know, understandings, and then the pains. The labor pains grow and grow until finally the baby is birthed. Birth pains. That's how she knows. She better get to the hospital or to a doctor or to someone who can help her deliver that baby. It's time. They say that in some cases, before a tsunami, animals begin to act strange. Some say that the behavior of dogs and cats and cattle could be harbingers. In other words, precursors could tell you what's going to happen if we can only read their behavior. It seems they have almost a sixth sense right before earthquakes, volcanoes, tsunamis, and so forth. Isn't it amazing that God made what we would call dumb creatures, but maybe they're not so dumb after all, more intelligent than we are in their ability to predict the future? You see, we as human beings don't seem to have that capability. But there are a few of us, and I think God gives this talent, this gift. They can see shadows before the real thing comes. Usually the real thing comes and projects a shadow. But wouldn't it be a fantastic thing to be able to see the shadow before the real thing comes? I believe that the horrors of this world do cast a shadow before they even make their appearance. How can we see them? We can read the Bible. We can understand. We can be wise through the knowledge of God. I was recently reading Proverbs in the Bible, and boy, what wisdom is in that one book in the Bible. Read it. Read it. It should be a bestseller. Of course, the Bible has always been a bestseller of sorts, but this book in itself, Proverbs, how much wisdom can you obtain more than this? And I was looking at chapter 22, just one chapter of the book of Proverbs. There's so much in here about riches and wealth and poverty and how each one of these measures a man's existence. And I love verse 1. It starts off, it says, a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. And loving favor rather than silver and gold. I believe that means a good name to God. Do you have a good name in heaven? Do you have the loving favor of Jesus Christ? Well, that is rather to be chosen than great riches, and it's better than having silver and gold. That's a revelation, isn't it? I think to the Rupert Murdochs and the Warren Buffetts and the Lord Jacob Rothschilds, this is something that they've never heard, obviously. Here's one. The rich lord it over you and I, but listen to what God says. Verse 2 says, the rich and poor meet together. The Lord is the maker of them all. Well, I realize sometimes the rich meet privately too, but here, basically, they meet on earth. We're all here together on this planet. And God, the Lord, is the maker of us all. So one is not better than the other. Who is the rich? Who is the poor? Well, when each one dies, we will see what the destiny is of each. Then we'll be able to know who really is the rich and who is the poor. Here, the manifestations of wealth mean nothing but upon death. Afterwards comes the judgment, says Hebrews. Then we will see who is the rich man and who is the poor. Listen to this one. And this one really gets to the subject we're talking about today. Verse 3. See, right away, just three of the verses in 22. See how much wisdom there is combined here? It says, a prudent man, and prudent means wise, intelligent, smart. A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. A wise person, in other words, sees the evil coming before it comes, and he prepares, he hides himself. Just like the animals, when the tsunami is coming, they said, we better go to higher ground. They got disturbed. But the human beings, who were basically the simple, the dumb, just passed right on by and were punished. By the way, did I not mention to you, I talked about once you die, then you'll know how rich you are? Because I think many of us already know that we're very rich because of a certain possession that we have, a pearl of great price. But listen to what it says here in verse 4. It says, by humility and the fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life. Can the Illuminati compete with this? No. By humility and the fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life. Now, here's a message for the Illuminati, and this is going to get also to the root of the subject for today. Verse 16 says, he that oppresseth the poor to increase his riches, and he that giveth to the rich shall surely come to want. What does it mean? If a rich man or a person oppresses others, cheats them, defrauds them, and that happens all every day in the corporate world, the oppressor of the poor, in order to increase his riches, will surely eventually come to want himself. May not be in this life, but he's going to want a lot of things in that next life. He's not going to have a whole lot, and he's going to want a whole bunch of things. He might even want a drink of water. But it also says, he that giveth to the rich. Do you know there's a lot of people that just give to the rich? They don't complain. They don't mind the rich even cheating others. They think it's sort of shrewd. It's sort of smart. They even applaud the confidence men and say, isn't that smart how he cheated those people? Ha ha. And they don't mind the rich. They admire the wealthy. And they throw their lot in with the wealthy and say, maybe by my association with them, I can also gain some of their wealth. I believe the Bill Clintons and the others of this world do that. And they're so delighted to be invited to the Bohemian Grove and to the Bilderbergers meetings and so forth. Oh, I've got it made now. I'm in with the in crowd. They help the rich oppress the poor by giving to the rich of their talents, of their brains, of their political acumen, and they too will surely someday come to want. Now let's get down to the nitty-gritty here. Talking about the fall of America today. America has become a debtor nation. We owe more than any country on earth. In fact, we owe more than all the rest of the world combined. We are a debtor nation. We owe debt. You think you got debt problems? America as a whole is in debt. We're in hock up to our teeth. And what does the Bible say? What does the wisdom of the Bible say? Well, verse 7 of chapter 22 of Proverbs says, the rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. Now the Illuminati have lent to us through their captive nations, China, Germany, Japan, and others, captive of devils, that's what they are. They have lent to us. We owe them money. They are the rich, the Bilderbergers and the others, and they have lent money to us. We are the borrower nation, and now we're going to have to face up to it. They rule over us. We are going to be made poor and poverty stricken. And we are the servant to the lender. You cannot escape biblical truth. If you owe money, they are your master. Whoever you owe to directs your path in this life. Now, I want to very quickly go to verse 13 because it has to do with what you and I can do about the mess that we're in as a nation, as a people, and maybe as individuals. Because I suspect that a few of you are in big trouble as debtors yourself. And it might be because you're a slothful person. Now, I know you say, well, not me. I work hard. I do this. I do that. But wait. Maybe you're slothful in your attitude, in your thought system. In your heart. Maybe that's where you're a slothful person. What is a sloth? Have you ever seen a sloth? They just seem to laze around. They never seem to be in a hurry. They're just slumbering. They just sort of get by. They don't want to do anything too drastic. They're never too adventurous. They just sort of amble on, go from day to day, muddle through. And they don't want to get too worked up about anything. Well, then they'd have to become active. Better just sort of get by. Yeah, the corrupt are out there. Yeah, the rich are doing in the poor, but, well, I'll get by. I'll be okay. Verse 13 says, the slothful man saith, there is a lion without. I shall be slain in the streets. That's King James language. You know what he says here? I can't go outside. There's a lion out there. He'll eat me. There's a lion outside. That means without. Outside, there's a lion. I'll get eaten alive. I can't fight. I can't fight Big Brother. I can't fight the government. I can't fight the bankers. I can't fight the rich. I'll just go back to my little cave and stay in here. Because if I go outside, the lion will eat me. You're a slothful person. You're a sloth. And believe me, I want you to face up to something. You're not hidden deep enough in your cave. The lion, after he's eaten everybody else up, if that's what he's going to do, he's going to ask himself, where's my next meal? I smell somebody hiding. He can't escape me. I have all the Big Brother systems in the world. I know of his banking accounts. I know what underground economy he's been participating in. I know he's got money. I know he's got food and substance. I know he's got things that I could have. All I have to do is go in his cave, root him out, and eat him up. And they will. It won't do you any good to hide. You can't hide. Now, I want to talk to you a little bit honestly, and I've given this a lot of thought. I do believe, I'm just going to tell you right now, this is not bragging. I believe God gives certain of us a glint of the future. I don't know all of the future, but I get the glory of seeing just a little bit of it. Others maybe are better prophetically than I am. But I'm going to give God glory for the little bit of light that he's given me over the years. If you had followed what I had told you on economics, I think you'd be a very prosperous person today. Just a year ago or so, I did an audio tape. I did a radio program here, and we offered the tape. And I told you on that program what I believed was going to happen to the economy. And I told you it wasn't direct from God. It wasn't thus saith the Lord, but it was wisdom. I told you at the time, and I got some criticism. People wrote to me and said I was all wet. I told you way over a year ago the economy was headed a certain way. I told you that the real estate market was going to crash. And at that time, things were going along really good. This was before the fall. I said, we're in for a big problem in real estate. And I said, but where can your money be put? I said, stocks. The stock market is going up. And as far as real estate, the two places that are at least going to do relatively well, I said, don't go to California or the East or West Coast or whatever. You're going to be in big trouble there if you're investing in real estate or even if you're a homeowner. But a few little pockets, such as Texas, such as on the Gulf Coast, where they're rebuilding because of Katrina and Hurricane Rita, those places will prosper relatively well. I mentioned to you the oil. I told you that oil was going to prosper. Why? Because they're hoarding it. There's a scarcity of oil. Oh, don't get me wrong. There's plenty of oil in the world. God is making new oil all the time. It's being replenished. It's not some kind of a fossil resource that's being depleted. That's all baloney. There will always be plenty of oil. It's just that the rich don't want to go down and get it. Because the more they've got to sell, the cheaper price they've got to sell it. So they create a scarcity. That's what they do. And I told you that's what they were going to do. And the price of oil would continue to go up. Now, here's where we're at today. The stock market is at an all-time high. It's volatile, don't get me wrong. One day it goes down 300 points. The next day it goes up 400. The next day down 200. And then it remains the same for a couple of weeks. And it goes up some more. But over time, it keeps going up and breaking into new highs. Both the NASDAQ and the Dow Jones average and the Standard & Poor's. That's the way it has been. I could have told you why, but I told you if you want to make money, buy stocks. Now I got a lot of people saying, no, the stock market's fixing to crash. People have told me, get out of stocks. But I knew stocks were going to go up. They have to. There's a reason why the stock market has gone up and your house value has gone down. It's because you, poor man and woman, don't own stocks generally. But you do own your home, and they want to deprive you of what you have. They own stocks. You own equity in your home. And they take away from your equity and they buy stocks with it. Did you hear what I just said? Now, where are we at here today? I just grabbed a few headlines off the internet. Here's one. General Motors loses $39 billion, a whopping loss. Associated Press, just today. General Motors, the great American car maker. Well, now they're not quite American, but they're international. But $39 billion, not million. I'm talking about B as in boy. And then here, I don't know why this has had to be BBC News, British Broadcasting Corporation, but a big story on the BBC News over in the United Kingdom. It says, foreclosure wave sweeps America. A wave of foreclosures and evictions is about to sweep the United States in the wake of the subprime mortgage lending crisis. This could destabilize the United States housing market and may lead to further turmoil in financial institutions who collectively own $1 trillion worth of subprime debt. Seems like they were giving thousands and thousands of mortgages to people who couldn't afford it. People making minimum wage went down and bought homes. How can that be? Some got 100% loans. They didn't have to put money down. Some people went and got 110% loans. That means not only were they able to buy their house, but they got 10% more for their pocketbooks. That's insane. It's insane. I had to sort of cough at that one. It almost choked me. I turned on Financial News Network on television and also Bloomberg.com news. And I found out this morning that Washington Mutual stock is down about 20% in one day. Something to do with mortgage corruption. But the head of IBM just got fired. But wasn't it nice? They gave him about $168 million severance pay. How would you like to lose your job because the company's losing money, International Business Machines, IBM? But don't worry. Severance pay, $168 million smackers. Now, that's what I call being fired in style. It seems like the rich just seem to prosper even when they're punished, on this earth at least. Amazing things. Citibank, also in the news today, Citibank has at least $11 billion loss. Looks like the whole board of directors may be replaced there. Things are going on that are incredible, that have never happened before. And some believe the whole house of cards could come crashing down. But I could see this coming for the last 20 years, and especially 10 years, and particularly the last 5 years. I want to explain something to you, dear friends. There's two ways to live, a country can live. One is by having money, and the other not. America has no money. Now, if you don't have money, you can at least have products or resources. We have no products. We make nothing. Well, how about resources? We have some resources. We have quite a bit of real estate. We once were, and maybe still are in some relative sense, a very rich country. We have a lot of things, stuff, buildings, highways, bridges, dams, ports. Now, when you have no more money, you've got to start selling what you own. I was talking to a rancher one time, or a guy used to be a rancher. I said, well, Bill, how's things going now with you? Hadn't seen you in about 20 years. You still poking those cattle? He owned about 10,000 acres, this guy did. Had a lot of cattle. He said, well, not very many now. I said, really? I said, you still have that big ranch? Well, no. He said, you see, I had about 10,000 acres, Tex. I said, yeah. He said, but I wasn't making enough in the cattle, and so I started selling my land. And I sold more and more and more. And, you know, my wife liked it. She liked the fact that she could buy things she had never had before. We got us a new car. We got us a new furniture. We went on vacations. But I had to keep selling my land because I wasn't making enough in the cattle. Pretty soon, I didn't have much land left. I had to start selling more of my cattle. And then pretty soon, I didn't have many cattle at all. And now I just have about 50 head of cattle and I have a 10-acre spread. I said, well, how do you live? He said, well, we have the money from all the land we sold. That should last us about another decade. I said, well, what are you going to do then? He said, I don't know. I've sold it all off. I don't know. Wow. How did that happen? He said, I don't know. I just know that I wanted more things and more stuff. I said, well, did it make you happy? He says, no, not really. He bought a lot of stuff. I said, who did you sell your land to? Well, he said, I sold it to a company named JBS Trust. He said, come to find out, it wasn't even an American company. My bank did all the paperwork, but it was turned out to be an Australian company. And beyond that, he said, it really wasn't Australian. It was owned by somebody over in Europe. And then they've come to find out that they were owned by people over in Red China. The Red Chinese owned my cattle ranch, or what used to be my cattle ranch. And he says, and this has happened to rancher after rancher. We all got offers we just couldn't refuse. It was more lucrative for us to sell our land than to keep it. For one thing, now we don't have to pay taxes on it. Did you know, dear friends, that Willie Nelson can stop his Farm Aid concerts because most of the farmers in America sold off all their land. And foreigners came and bought it up. And now the farmers want more American things. They're buying everything at bargain basement prices. Why do you think the stock market is going up? Now, I want you to use your common sense. About 5 or 7 years ago, $1 was equal to 1 euro. That's the monetary unit in Europe, in Western Europe. $1 was about equal to 1 euro. And then it started going up. It was 110, 120, 130. I don't even know what it is now. It's going to around, you know, it takes $1.50 almost now to buy 1 euro. 45 or 50% increase in the last 4 or 5 years. Now, I want you to understand how this works. If you go to Europe or you buy something from Europe, you're paying 45 or 50% more, and they're paying 45 or 50% less when they buy something American. Now, here's what happens. The stock market has gone up to you, but not to them. They've got 45 or 50% more dollars in their pocket than they had 5 years ago. They didn't have to work for it. The dollar has slid down, and their currency has gone way higher. Now they can afford to buy American stocks, and they're buying them at bargain basement prices. Well, we've gone through about half the program today. We're going to come back in a minute, and I want to tell you why America is going to fall, and fall very, very hard. This is Tex Mars. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Stay tuned. Hello, friends. Tex Mars here again. You know, we have an excellent book. It's really an ancient book, and yet it's also modern. It's a book that some say is anti-Semitic, and it's been banned in countries around the world. We're one of the few places that have the courage to offer this book. It's entitled The Protocols of Zion. The formal long title is The Protocols of the Meetings of the Learned Elders of Zion. Now, this book is actually notes or a record of a meeting of Zionist world leaders many decades ago. And in each area of society, the economy and religion, food and so forth, they state what they intend to do. This was leaked out of Russia by a man named Victor Marsden, who was a correspondent for a London newspaper. It was published and caused a great sensation, even in America. Henry Ford, who founded the Ford Motor Company, believed in it and serialized this book in his newspaper, the Dearborn Michigan Independent. In fact, he's written the foreword for one of the editions of the book. We're offering this book for $18. $18. Please add $4 for shipping and handling. What is the plan of the Zionist world conspiracy? What do they plan for the American economy? You could be shocked at what they've got planned. In fact, I'm looking here at page 154, and it says that they're planning a great global financial fall. A great global financial fall. And there will be a chronic shortage of food. And a killing out of Gentiles. A killing out of the ones they call the cattle, the goyim. Why? Because hunger, they say on page 155, creates the right of capital, that's of money, to rule the worker. Hunger creates the right of money to rule the worker. When people are hungry, they'll give up about anything, including their security, including their freedom. It says here, when the hour strikes for our sovereign Lord of all the world, the Zionist Antichrist, to be crowned, everything will be swept away that might be a hindrance. You too will be swept away. Interesting, isn't it? The workers are deceived, it says right here. The workers are deceived by us. And the goyim have lost the habit of thinking unless prompted by the suggestions of our media specialist. You've lost the power to think because of the media suggestions that keep you in thrall, they say. And then page 156 says that they're going to be able to even turn you against your government and against each other. We will turn on each other and destroy each other in this country when we're hungry, when we're desperate. I remember Vicente Fox, former president of Mexico, just this 2 weeks ago, he was on the Larry King show, pimping for the North American Union and the end of American sovereignty. And he said, someday the American people will come and beg the politicians for the AMRO, for the new currency. He didn't say the AMRO, he just said the new currency. For a North American Union. Someday you won't be complaining about the North American Union and the end of American sovereignty and the new currency. Someday you're going to be begging the politicians for it. Begging them to take over and save you is what Mr. Fox was saying. Remember, it was Fox who signed the SPP agreement with the Prime Minister of Canada and with President George W. Bush to end American sovereignty by the year 2010. But listen to what page 156 says. They will turn us on each other and cause hatred of workers against the rich. Of course, they're the rich. But they hide. They say this hatred will be magnified by the effects of an economic crisis, which will stop dealings on the exchanges and bring industry to a standstill. We shall create by all the secret subterranean methods open to us, and with the aid of gold, which is all in our hands, a universal economic crisis whereby we shall throw upon the streets whole mobs of workers simultaneously in all the countries. And these mobs will rush delightedly to shed the blood of those whom, in the simplicity of their ignorance, they have envied from their cradles, and whose property they will then be able to loot. They are bringing in, I want to just tell you something, friends. You know what I'm telling you is true. They have already brought in 30 to 40 million illegal aliens into America. And right now they're happy. They have jobs. They at least have minimum wage jobs or somewhere near it in America. All these millions and millions and millions of illegal workers. But once the economic crisis comes and even the tens of millions of illegal alien workers in America from Mexico, from the Ukraine, from India and all these other countries, from Brazil, from Argentina, from Honduras and Guatemala, once they're in America and they have no jobs because the economy has fallen, guess what? They're going to look at you and say, you, gringo, you have land, you have a home, you have a car, we have nothing. We will take from you. There's more of us than there are you, gringo. They'll take from you. An economic crisis, magnify the effects of an economic crisis. The exchanges, everything, industry will come to a standstill. And then they will throw upon the street whole mobs of workers simultaneously. And these mobs will rush delightedly to shed the blood of those whom in their simplicity of their ignorance. I want you to understand something. The Bible, did it not talk about those who don't foresee what's coming and are simple-minded? Simplicity. They don't think ahead. You see, they say, it's okay for Giuliani and Clinton and George Bush to bring in all these millions of workers. That's great. We have cheap labor. And we have all these products from China and overseas. It's wonderful. But they can't think ahead. The prudent foresee this coming. Friends, by the year 2010, and that's just a few years away, there could be 60 million illegals. They're going to be angry. They're going to be upset. They're going to be frustrated. And the government won't even have the money to pay their medical bills anymore. They won't be able to get their welfare checks. They're going to be angry. And the black mobs in the ghettos will be angry too. No more welfare checks. What do you mean? We'll take from those who have. Those whom in the simplicity of their ignorance they have envied from their cradles and whose property they will then be able to loot. You better leave the cities. You better go out into the country. But wait, they have cars now. They can come and get you. You say, well, they can't drive. They don't have a driver's license. Well, Hillary Clinton is already promoting, as is the governors of California and New York, give driver's license to the illegal aliens. Then they can vote. Because in most states, what does it take to vote a driver's license? Juan Gomez. Nikita Ivanov. They'll all vote. They're not American citizens. It doesn't matter. They've got driver's licenses and they can vote. And who do you think they're going to put in? Somebody that will take away their welfare checks? Somebody that will take away their rights to stay in America? Oh, no. They'll vote in somebody who will give them more and more. The Circus Maximus is in town. And the food and the bread will be handed out. And if not, they will take and loot from those who, it says in the Protocols of Zion, they have envied from their cradles. They've envied you, and now Reconquista they're going to take. This is Tex Mars. Let's return to our regular program. We're talking, in fact, about the downfall of the American economy. Now, we're going to make this a two-part program because we've got so much here. A two-part program. Now, I want you to understand, there are twin engines of any economy. There's money and there's industry. Money and industry. America has no money and we have no industry. What are we going to do? Our industry has been rooted out. I have a picture here in front of me of Michael Dell. He's head of what, until recently, until Hewlett-Packard sort of overtook him, the largest computer company in the world. And there he is with Indians from India. He's over in New Delhi, India, and they've announced they're going to build a new factory there. It was only a year or two ago that I had a picture in the newspaper here of Michael Dell, the president and founder of Dell Computers, in China with Chinese leaders. And they were gloriously announcing they're going to build a new Dell computer company in China. India, China. 60 million workers in America within just a few more years. Meanwhile, what the jobs they don't take here going overseas and outsourcing. Alan Blinder was one of the governors of the Federal Reserve Bank. One of the governors of the Federal Reserve Bank, Alan Blinder. Now he's a big Wall Street type. He gave a speech recently. And I don't think he was trying to alarm people because he was giving a speech to bankers and CEOs of corporations, and they seem to be very happy with what Mr. Blinder told them. And I want to tell you, and I want to see, dear friends, if you'll be happy with what Mr. Alan Blinder told them. Now, if you don't believe this, just go Google it up. Go to a search engine on the net and look up Alan Blinder and see what the news recently says about him in his speech. He let the cat out of the bag, but nobody seemed to complain. Here's what he said. He said, because of outsourcing of industry, in other words, us bringing all the industry overseas and closing up American plants and industry, he said within 10 years, 40 million Americans will be out of jobs. 4 million? No. 14 million? No. 40, the big 40, friends, 40 million Americans out of a job within 10 years. Huh? 40 million Americans out of a job. Now, combined with those that are out of a job now, that will be much, much greater than the 1930s depression. He says it's because labor is cheaper overseas. But there's another factor. 15 years ago, on this radio program, I warned you of something that was coming up. You see, I warned you, first of all, I told you about some good news. There would be a great, great increase in America. A prosperity. Before the fall comes prosperity. It's a strange thing. But sometimes things look brightest right before the darkness. You know, you've heard the old saying, oh, don't worry, we're in the valley now, but look up, things will get better. No, 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 no. We were on the mountaintop, and now we're going descending down into the valley of Gehenna. I want you to understand that. We've been on the mountaintop, and we're going down. The elevator is going down, and there's no way to make it move back up. Floor by floor. It started on floor 666, and it's headed downward. And the flames get hotter the more you descend on that elevator to hell, as far as the economy is concerned. Here's what happened. America had know-how. America had intelligence. America had engineers. America had physicists, scientists, computer professionals. And the rest of the world needed them. And besides that, the rest of the world had cheap labor that we didn't have. But what they didn't have was the factories. They didn't have the robotized robots. They didn't have the computers to run factories over there. And so they had to buy computers and microchips and robots and high-tech brains from America, and they did. And it was worth it to the corporations to build over there. It was an investment. And so the corporations of this world, they're all internationalists. They're not American patriots. The heads of the corporations bought from America, and America prospered. Hewlett-Packard, Dell Computers, IBM, all prospered. Advanced Micro Devices, Intel, all of the huge high-tech companies and many others prospered. Why? They sold all the factory equipment, semiconductors, to the foreigners, and plants were built. And then China says, I would like to build cars here. And they said, we'll sell you all the robots, all the equipment. Our architects, our engineers will show you how to do it. And we did. And you know what? Those architects and engineers were paid handsomely for their efforts. And we, the American people, prospered over the last 15 years from building up the rest of the world. But once it's built, that's it. It's sort of like this, you see. I had a friend one time that lost his job. I said, how did it happen? He said, well, you see, I'd been around for quite a while. I knew a lot. And they brought a younger man in. And they had me train him. But once I had trained him for about 5 years, they said, we don't need you anymore. Why? You've been at this company for 30 years and you're making way too much money. The younger man we brought in is younger and more energetic and he's willing to work for half your salary. And the gentleman said, but wait, I trained him. I taught him everything he knows. I gave him everything. Yes, and we thank you immensely for that. Goodbye, sir. We taught Chinese, we taught all these others everything they know, but now they know it. We gave them all of everything they needed in high tech, and now they have it. And Dell had to build computers in America 10 years ago, 5 years ago, but he doesn't need to anymore. Not when a Chinese computer programmer will work for 1/5, 20% of what an American programmer makes. And now they're closing up the American plants. Now, for a while, it was good they didn't have all the factories and Americans had all this money because we were making so much money selling to all the foreigners and building all these high-tech plants and so forth that we had money and we were making things. And they started setting up even auto-making plants in America, Toyota, Saturn, and the others. But now they're not going to be profitable anymore. Unless, of course, they hire Mexican workers for them. Because Mexican workers are willing to work for so little compared to Americans. When Hurricane Katrina happened, I knew of a number of carpenters and roofers rushed there. They needed jobs. Wow, look at all the homes and businesses and stores that need to be rebuilt. And they got there, and you know what? They all got jobs right away. But within just weeks, floods of Mexican illegal aliens flooded in to New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. And they began laying off all the Anglos, sending them home. We don't need you anymore. We're paying you $20, $30 an hour. We've got a Mexican to do it for six. Goodbye. Goodbye. And now they say New Orleans may not be a black chocolate city, as its mayor said. It may turn out to be a brown city. So many Mexicans have flooded into New Orleans. Used to be jazz music. Well, on Bourbon Street, I guess they're going to have Juan Gomez Avenue now because the mariachi bands are moving in. Things are changing, friends. Things are changing. Money versus industry. Money always collides with industry. I want you to understand that. Money collides with it and wins. Amidst an ocean of labor and products, money will win. Money vies for control with industry, but eventually, if enough money comes in, it will win over industry. Every time. And American industry is gone, shut down, sent overseas, outsourced, turned over for accomplishment even in-house by alien force inside our own borders and to the south of us. Money has gained control and preeminence. Money. Thus, the Jewish power is ascendant and winning because the Jewish power is Rothschild money. The less industry in a country, the more money is king. Did you hear what I just said? The less industry in a country, the more money is king. If you go down to Mexico, it's the rich that have everything. And the poor have nothing. Why? Because they don't have the industry. In every country where there is industry, money has to compete. But when there is no industry, then money rules. And now they've taken away our industry. And now the American workers will have to bow down before the kings of money. Because Jewish power, which is money, fuels the engine of progress. Heinrich Heine was a German writer and philosopher back in the 18th century. One time a friend of his told Heinrich, he said, "The Jews have no God." Now Heinrich knew better because Heinrich was Jewish. Heinrich said, "You are wrong. Even the Rothschilds have a God." His friend said, "How so?" He said, "Money is their God. Money is their God." Now friends, even the dollar bill tells you who rules America. Because the all-seeing eye of the Rothschild dynasty is on our very $1 bill on the Great Seal of the United States, or at least on the obverse, the reverse side of the Great Seal. But even on the formal side of it, where you have the Great Eagle of America, so-called, even that is the Eagle of Rothschild. And what is hovering above the eagle but the six-pointed star of Judaism? The seal of Solomon, the hexagram of the witches and the devil worshipers, is above the eagle on our $1 bill. Who do you think rules money? The Jews. And who rules the Jews? Rothschild. And money is king and industry is its servant. Money fuels the engine of progress. And when you have money, labor, that is, workers, are dethroned, emasculated, enslaved. What little industry America has left is subservient to the power. And if it rebels, they will take that industry and move it elsewhere where the workers, the labor, will bow down. In China, they'll bow down. In India, they'll bow down. In Central and South America, they will bow down. American workers, you better bow down too. They're going to level you. Industry is throttled by money, monitored, watched, controlled, regulated by money. Workers are plentiful. They're a dime a dozen. But I'm an engineer. I was educated at MIT or Rice. You are nothing, dear friends. For every American engineer that makes $80,000 a year, there are 500 Chinese and Indians coming out of American colleges. Why do you think the money powers caused Bush and Perry and all the other governors of the states to change their laws and make it so the foreigners and the illegal aliens don't even have to pay out-of-state tuition to our universities and colleges? There are more Chinese and Indonesian and Indian students at the University of Texas in the doctoral programs than there are Americans. The Texans here in Texas pay for the University of Texas, but the prime slots for higher education goes to foreigners. Don't you see what they're doing? They're passing laws so that foreigners actually get lower tuition than American citizens at our universities. Why? They want the foreigners to be trained in computers and nuclear plants and optics and fiber optics and lasers and robotics. Why? Because once they're trained at the University of Texas and the University of Massachusetts and Ohio State University and Cal State and all the other great institutions of learning, once these foreigners are trained at American tax-supported universities, then they're willing to work for a pittance of what Americans will work for. And all of American industry loves it. And they want you to pay for it. And while the foreigners are here, even the students going to our colleges at cheaper tuition rates than our own students have to pay, they bring their families over here and they get free medical care courtesy of you. industry is being throttled, the machine of industry, and workers are today being forced to grovel and beg for daily bread. Now let's talk about politics. Politics has abandoned industry and is following after money. Do you understand what I'm telling you? The politicians don't give a hoot about industry. They follow the money. If a plant in a congressional district goes out of business and 4,000 people are laid off, they may be mad at their congressman, but he doesn't mind it if he just got a $100,000 donation from a Jewish lobby group. Or the red Chinese government, perhaps. Do you understand what I'm telling you? You say, oh, the congressmen care. They know if workers are laid off, they're going to be angry and won't vote for them. Oh, they will. Because the media will tell them, this congressman is wonderful. He's fighting for you. He wants to get your jobs returned to you. Oh, yes, he's against outsourcing. But then he votes for it when he gets to Congress. He votes for money. He votes for capital. Politics in America has abandoned industry and is following money. Now, next week, we're going to talk about why this has occurred and what can be done about it. Now, I want you to understand something. America is a very smart people. Americans are a very smart people, except in one area, money. We're not very smart on money. And Americans, I'm sorry to say, are lazy. They're slothful. They're slothful. They don't want to admit that the lion is outside their door. Or if they do, they holler out, lion, I can't go out. They don't want to go out. They don't want to be eaten alive. I want to propose something to you. I want to propose to you that America is finished as a nation. We have been living in the midst of what is nothing more than a great Ponzi scheme. A great Ponzi scheme. And we have now reached the zenith of our civilization. And we have a generation that I call the consumption society and the party generation. And they are using up their inheritance. The slacker generation sets no value on what you and I did, what we've accomplished, but they will spend our money. And they're spending it as fast as they can. And there is no seed money. They're not investing in the future. The slacker generation, the party generation, the consumption society is here. I call these people the Peter Pan generation too. You see, Peter Pan, the story goes, never wanted to grow up. They haven't grown up. The rising generation is the Peter Pan generation. They won't grow up until it's too late. And then they will commit suicide. This is Tex Mars. We've been talking about the economic downfall of America, part one. Please tune in next week. Friends, we're on the Titanic and the iceberg is straight ahead. My prayer, dear friends, is you'll tune in each week during this same time and discover the power of prophecy.